And welcome back to Coast for the next couple hours. Let's have some fun. Mr. Lobo back with us. Of course, he's the late night movie program host. We're going to talk with him about films, scary films, sci-fi films, and so many more. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Mr. Lobo is the host of the late night movie program Cinema Insomnia, which is a sensation for more than 15 years, starring as the amazing Criswell in the film Plan 9. And he is lording over late night slumber party fun with his patented blend of humor and satire. You'll hear it. Mr. Lobo is the MC for film festivals like Blobfest and provides background on films with all kinds of different flavors. Mr. Lobo back on Coast to Coast. Hello there, Mr. Lobo.
Greetings, Mr. Lobo. Oh, greetings, Mr. Lobo. What am I saying? I'm Mr. Lobo. I, George, I think we're in another dimension. I don't even think we're in the same universe.
I'm Mr. Lobo in the other dimension.
Ah. Exactly. It's bizarre, isn't it?
That's right. What would my life be in another dimension if I were Mr. Lobo?
Well, you know, I've never seen you and me in the same place at the same time.
I know. We have to meet one day. My gosh. What state are you in?
Well, now I'm in Pennsylvania.
You're all over the map.
I'm traveling.
Yes, you were.
We went to Virginia for Monster Fest, and then we went up to Oaks for RetroCon, and now we're recovering. And then, of course, they're tearing out my bathroom, so I can't even be home. So now
you're out.
We're in a hotel till our house is ready to be in. But
what's going on in the movie world these days?
Are
you still making
all
these scary things?
A lot of scary things, and a lot of good sci-fi too. You know, I mean. I don't know if you saw the new Blade Runner, but
I haven't seen it yet.
I enjoyed it. I mean, it doesn't have the soul of the original, but it's intelligent and it takes its time, which is unusual for a modern movie.
I'd like it when these movies get to go online, and you can watch them that way in the comfort of your home. It's really fun.
Well, that's what's happening. I think a lot of people are doing that. That's why ticket sales have been plummeting, and a lot of people are not going out to the cinema. You know, or when they do, they all go out to see the same movie. Everyone goes out to see, Avengers or Star Wars. But a lot of the, really movie lovers are spending a lot of time now watching on streaming. You know,
The old-time movies would not make it today. When I look at the John Wayne Westerns and some of the movies Frank Sinatra was in, and they were good quality scripts, but there was no high action, there was no digital effects, they didn't have those things. They wouldn't make it today.
You know, it's interesting because I feel like, I think we've been sold a bad bill of goods, because I think that everybody thinks that everything needs to be faster and louder and have more effects. And, when it comes down to it, if you're not engaged by the story, if you're not engaged by the characters, you just sort of tune out.
No, you're right.
So I'm hoping that, have a return to it. I think on television we are having that, because we are able to, there have been so many great, there's so many great series now, like Stranger Things and things. Breaking Bad, where they really can take their time and develop characters that you, you want to know their stories and you're really engaged. And it's not an action pack. It's not things flying at the screen and, a million digital effects.
What's the demographics for movies these days? What age group are they going after?
Well, right now I think they're trying to get women. To be honest, I feel like women are spending all the money, and at least my wife spends all the money. So I don't know, but I think that's a big demographic. I think the other thing is that I think a lot of the studios have given up on America markets. I think they're really focusing on the foreign market.
Really?
Which is a shame, because a lot of times they're always thinking in terms of, well, is that joke going to translate, or maybe we shouldn't have too much humor, or maybe we should have something that's more, vague. And I think that's kind of, if you're thinking in those sort of terms when you're creating a story, I think that you can, lose a lot of texture, a lot of feeling.
What about the age demographic?
Age demographic, I think that, you know, I think that they've written off the younger people. I think the people who are going to the movies are probably, you know, 35 and older.
Really? I would have thought it was the other way around.
Yeah, I feel like, at least for feature films or families, you know, that's another big demographic, where if you've got something like you know, a Pixar movie or a new Disney film, like, or Star Wars, where it's something where people are bringing their kids, and I think that, you know, as far as like actual cinema ticket sales, I mean, I think that's you know, that's a lot of who they're aiming at is parents and their kids.
What happened in terms of the progression of television and movies when, for example, we had Bing Crosby, Red Skelton, Jack Benny, but we had all these older guys,
right,
that would not make it, Bob Hope. They would not make it today. If they went on television today for a new show, they wouldn't make it. Nobody would watch them. In the younger genre, the younger kids wouldn't watch that at all, yet they succeeded in a big way then. But why didn't television and the movies go after the younger audience in those days?
You know, I think that a lot of, you know, television in those days was relatively new, and I think a lot of the stars that were on television were carrying over
from radio,
radio and earlier films, you know, and so they were already established commodities, and perhaps nostalgic too. I mean, you know, we go through periods of being very nostalgic, and you know, right now I think we're having that period again, where we're kind of looking backwards and kind of, you know, we've got things, you know, old television series like Twin Peaks and things that are 25 years old that they're trying to continue and do a, and Star Wars, where they're trying to continue, and all the actors are, you know, in their 50s and 60s now. So, you know, there's a lot of these franchises and things that they're going back to everything that worked, you know, before the digital revolution, you know, because really the past 10 years or so, you know, it's anybody's game. Nobody knows what's coming next. And I think that it's just, you know, everyone's in a panic, and they're really just, it's like Back to the Future, where they can't fix it now, but if we go to the past and we can, you know, something that broke through a while ago, we can still kind of grab on to those people who we reached when we could actually break through and reach people. But I think almost everything now is some kind of existing franchise.
Did you
a lot of the big budget things?
Did you see the movie Noah from a couple of years ago?
I did not, George.
One of the worst I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
They went too far with animation. They had rocks that turned into talking creatures.
Oh boy!
And you know, I wanted to see a good rendition of Noah and the story of Noah, and I wanted to see it in a well done fashion.
Right.
This was horrible.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times when they, you know, especially if it's going to be on IMAX or whatever, they just feel like, because it's going to be 3D and everything, they just have to have a million silly things happen.
Yeah, exactly. And it, you know, I don't like movies like that. I want more reality with good storytelling and good acting. And you know, these talking rocks and Noah, they're just, it lost me.
Well, you know, fantasy is difficult to do, because, you know, if you do it right, the audience is doing most of the work for you, because, you know, the suspension of disbelief, if you can get your audience, if you can win your audience over and get them to buy into that concept of whatever illusion you're trying to create, then, you know, you don't have to force it down their throat with too many effects. People will want to believe what you're trying to put out there.
So tell me a little bit about yourself again. And we've talked many times, Mr. Lobo, but you're a horror host.
Seven times, sure.
That's right. What does a horror host do?
A horror host. Well, a horror host is a presenter of films, and the tradition goes back quite a ways. You know, even in radio, I think we had horror hosts where, you know, the Inner Sanctum and The Old Witch, and where there would be anthologies of stories, and there would be always this presenter. And when television came around, and we had when the Universal films first started coming to television, the films of the 30s started coming to TV, I think they felt they wanted to reach younger audiences by having a presenter, something that was current to sort of connect it with an audience. And so in the 50s and 60s, they had these wild and colorful vampires, mad scientists, you know, Dr. Morgus, right?
My buddy.
Was your horror host.
That's right.
And every market, every city had their own.
Their version.
So it was a national phenomenon that happened locally. And as things progressed, and a lot of things followed that format. It was so popular. You have things like The Twilight Zone. It was always the presenter. So, you know, and I would even say even William Castle, you know, a lot of those kind of, Alfred Hitchcock, you know, they all kind of took that role as the presenter. And I think in horror, it's always been, there's always been this thing where here's this guy who's going to take us over the river Styx or take us to the place where all the weird stuff happens, and he's going to bring us home safely again. And in my particular case, I worked at a TV station and an ABC TV station in late 90s, early 2000s. And they had a overnight movie on Saturday that ran 20 minutes short. And me being a big fan of Bob Wilkins and Creature Features, which was my horror host growing up, I suggested the idea that I could fill that 20 minutes with background on the movie and comedy and weird stuff, and they didn't care, which was the best thing ever.
Turn you loose, right?
Yeah, they really didn't care. That time slot was dead to them, so they didn't really care. And we brought that time slot up. We went from hash marks to a 2 in the ratings, which was 22,000 homes.
That's a good bump.
At 3 in the morning, 22,000 homes. So we went into syndication, and then we were picked up by a syndicator. And then at one point, we had around 2005, we probably had a 45 million homes footprint, you know, with the state, all
Huge.
The stations we were on and all the markets. And of course, broadcast has diminished much since then, and now we are on streaming. And I have my own streaming channel for Roku called OSI 74, and I'm still hosting brand new episodes of Cinema Insomnia.
And so they can find you on Roku?
Yes, they can. OSI 74 is the channel, and if you put it in your channel with a channel guide, if you look in your channel store, you'll find it.
What a way to do it! Good for you. What drives you into this genre? What do you like about it?
What drives me into this genre? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
No, I love it. It's fun. You know, I think it's a thrill. You know, I think it's, you know, at least a good horror movie, you know, you feel, you know, it's like a roller coaster. You know, there's two kinds of roller coasters. One where you go, okay, I'm never getting that on that again. And the one where you want to get right back on it and ride it again, you know. And so I love movies, and I love being able to, and this kind of, again, this kind of thing is unique in the way that I get to voice my opinions on things. I get to write, I get to perform, I get to produce, and I get to watch movies. So it's I'll just do it until they take my crayons away and break them.
Would you call Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho a horror film?
I would. I think it's the granddaddy of Friday the 13th and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, they're all doing the Ed Gein story in their own way. And I think that, you know, Hitchcock wanted to scare people. He wasn't messing around. He wanted to scare people.
Right, and he did it with the great, great filmography. You know, the way, like in the shower scene... You never saw her getting stabbed.
No, but you felt it.
But you felt it. That's right. And you saw the blood and everything. You thought it was happening. You could feel it.
There's a great story where they were stabbing different melons to see what was the proper sound of someone getting stabbed with a knife. And Hitchcock just stood there in silence and watched this guy stabbing all the sound guy stabbing on the melons. And then as he's walking out the door, he just says, Cassava.
I love it. Are movies cheap, horror movies cheap to make?
I think good ones are. I mean, there are some high-budget horror movies, but you know, a horror movie is a surprise. Is mostly built on surprise, and if it's going to surprise you, it has to appear spontaneous.
Right.
So the more effects and things that you put into a horror movie, the harder it is to get people to really think that something surprising is going to happen. So, you know, I think that playing with sound effects and shadow and I think is the best way. And the first, and isolation too. You know, if you're in a dark cabin in the woods with no cell phone, that's a lot scarier than being in a crowd scene with a million people.
And would you call Stephen King's It, for example, a horror film? I guess I would.
Certainly, it was scary, you know. But it's interesting, as scary and as effective as that is, that movie is, and the new one is very scary. You know, there are no on-screen kills in that whole movie.
It's no,
a rated R film.
It's a perception.
I think the psychological aspect, and the for me, I think good horror has a fantasy aspect and a psychological aspect, because what separates it from a crime film? If it's just murders, then it's a crime movie. You know, so there has to be a fantasy aspect to some degree, something, an X factor, something we don't understand. And there also has to be, the other thing I said.
I don't think I would ever reach my hand down a sewer. Would you?
Well, if there was money in it, perhaps.
Probably a rat down there or something like that.
But if there was a clown in there, no. No, I'd go running the other way if there was a clown in my sewer.
Saturday Night Live this weekend had
Roto-Rooter.
Saturday Night Live this weekend had a takeoff on the movie It, and they had Hillary Clinton down there as the clown in the sewer.
Oh, my gosh.
They're getting so political, so political.
Well, and again, that's the other part, right? You capture the popular imagination. Everyone talks about it. Everybody, it's a shared experience, and I think that's a great thing about the movies too. When it's the water cooler conversation. It's the subject of all our jokes. You know, I think everybody wants to capture the popular imagination.
Do we call these B-type movies?
Well, it is an A movie. If they're spending
$2,550 million,
that's, they've got a lot banking on that.
Well, what determines A, B, C, whatever these numbers are? The money spent make it?
A true B movie is a throwback term to the time of the drive-ins and the double features. You know, the studio had the A picture that they were really counting on.
The expensive picture.
The expensive picture with the best actors and the best sets and the biggest budgets. And then they would accompany that in a double bill with a cheaper film. And,
And actors whose names you don't know.
Actors whose names you don't know. And it's interesting because, you know, in the case of The Blob, which is a movie that's near and dear to me because it's, I host Blobfest every year in Phoenixville, in the town where the film was made. But The Blob was the B picture, and I Married a Monster from Outer Space was the A picture, but The Blob was so popular,
yeah,
and Steve McQueen was such a rising star that they flipped it around, and The Blob became the A picture, and the I Married a Monster became the B picture.
Probably at half the cost.
Yeah, it was a cheap film. I mean, I can't remember if it was 60 grand or I don't know what they spent on it, but it wasn't that expensive.
And what was the Blair Witch? How much did that cost to make?
I think they just rifled through someone's couches.
It was like 15 grand or something.
Yeah,
like
20
that.
Bucks, I think.
Yeah. Something. I mean, the marketing cost more when some studio
took it
over.
Marketing they spent millions on, and Sony was brilliant because they took this thing that was independent and cheap and made millions on it, you know?
They really did. Well, stay with us, Mr. Lobo. We're going to come back and talk more about sci-fi and horror films. And then in the last hour, we'll open up the phone lines and get your thoughts on some of these movies next. And welcome back to Coast, Mr. Lobo with us. We're going to take calls with him next hour. So Halloween right around the corner, Mr. Lobo. What are you doing these days?
Oh boy, there's so much. I've got just appearances. I'm going to be on this horror video game podcast every week in October. I've got a special Cinema Insomnia Halloween special on the channel. So much, a lot of stuff. This is my busiest time of the year.
Give us some tips on what you're doing.
So some tips.
Yeah, you're doing some. You're doing some different things for Halloween. I know you are.
Well, you know, I mean, God, I don't want to give all my secrets away.
Come
but,
on,
you know,
give them away.
Well, let's see here. Gosh, if you put me on the spot here, George.
Aren't you doing a special?
I am doing a special. I am doing a special. And I don't want to say a whole lot about it. It does involve vampires. And
is it going to be live or on tape? What are you doing?
It's going to be live to tape, but it's involving a film that has never had a VHS or DVD release that we're premiering on the channel.
Never.
Never. So it's exciting, but it's kind of a little bit top secret.
What do you think about the technology of streaming these days?
I think it's amazing. I think it's giving us a new generation of B movies. And I think that, you know, again, you know, it makes the distribution so easy where, you know, if you've got Wi-Fi in your house, you can get channels and movies and TV programs to your television without your cable box or anything else. And I think that's going to change everything. You know, it's going to be really complicated. There's going to be a war for a few years, I think, because I think all the major players like Disney and Sony are all going to try to have their own separate channels. Like Disney has pulled all their stuff from Netflix, and they're going to have their own channel. So if you want to see Star Wars, or if you want,
yeah, they've all become their own network to themselves.
Yeah. So you know, we went from paying $200 a month for cable, and now it's going to be a la carte. Where it's going to be like, okay, well, $10 a month for Netflix and $10 a month for Hulu and $10 a month for Disney. So, you know, I'm a little worried about it kind of going back to being just as expensive, to be just as expensive as before. But I think it'll settle down at a certain point. But I do, right now, I am really enjoying the variety and as a producer, enjoying the directness of being able to, you know, I can film something tomorrow and have it up on the channel the same night, you know, and have thousands of people jump right on it. So all that is very exciting to me, and I really enjoy that world of streaming. I think that, you know, we had a lot. You know, Hollywood has kind of had producers, the creators by the neck so long that it's kind of exciting to be able to go direct to people.
Well, and look what it's doing, I think, to the networks and to television stations all around the country, because you don't need these huge transmitting stations anymore. All you got to do is stream something.
It's completely changing everything, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, we took all that bandwidth away from the UHF stations back in the 80s. You know, all that stuff was all sold out for wireless, and you know, so we lost a lot of the great local stations, over the air stations, when that bandwidth was redistributed. And now you know, now we're getting TV programs on that same bandwidth, so it's bizarre.
It is dramatic. Yeah, technology is really, but what happens when technology fails, Mr. Lobo, when something happens?
It fails every day.
The satellites go out. Something happens.
What is it?
When the satellites go out or something happens like that, something tragic.
Yeah, I know. I think that people still need to buy their physical media, you know. I mean, I've got my giant vault full of DVDs and stuff just in case the sunspot wipes everything out.
That's true. Now, you're on YouTube, too, aren't you?
I am. I've got two shows. There's a Besto TV has hired me to host. See, I missed that whole YouTube thing. This is exciting for me. But I have a show called Mr. Lobo Does, and I just sort of explore different topics as Mr. Lobo. I'm not hosting a movie. I'm just looking at things like conventions, comic books, fidget spinners, the eclipse, any different topic that you could imagine in character as Mr. Lobo, and that's been a lot of fun. And then I have another program called Creative Continuity, where I go to comic cons and conventions and interview artists and actors and creators, and so it's just different stuff. And I hopefully I can reach some of those millennials who can't sit through a 2-hour movie.
All-time favorite horror film. What is it?
All-time favorite horror. Are we talking scary or campy? Because you can go a couple of different directions.
I'd say scary.
Well, you know, it's like being a favorite child. But,
I'm like you. I really don't have one.
you know, I think the original Alien is amazingly effective as a movie. I think that Return of the Living Dead is still scary. But I think that, it varies, you know. I think that that's what's beautiful about it is that you could ask me that question a week from now and I might have a totally different answer.
What did you like about the original Alien?
What did I like about the original
Well,
Alien?
that was 1979, I think, if I can't.
79. You know, it was interesting because it's a hybrid. It's a horror film and it's a sci-fi film, and you know, it had incredible style. It was sort of postmodern to where it seemed new and old at the same time. It's dark, it's creepy. The acting is very good in it, and you don't see the monster too much. You know, it's as beautiful and as well designed as H.R. Giger's creation of the alien, which I think is stands as one of the most memorable and interesting looking monsters in all film. You don't really get a good bead on it, which makes it so much scarier.
That's true. Made Sigourney Weaver, didn't it? Really pushed her in a different level.
Oh yeah, she wasn't anyone. She was a newcomer. No one, you know. And the fact that she kind of, she comes out of it the hero, which was unusual for a film of that time, and she was tough. And I think that when they did the, and I don't even think Aliens is a sequel. I think it's a whole different movie. Aliens, which is an action film that has horror. I guess the other one was kind of a horror sci-fi, and I think that Aliens is kind of horror action. But Alien, you know, I think between those two movies, I mean, she was a, you know, blockbuster material forever after that.
And how about the would you consider Alien sci-fi, horror, or both?
Both, you know, and I was talking about this earlier. It's like I think that it's a lot of sci-fi and horror kind of wash into each other, you know. And I think that goes back to the 50s also, where when we got more conservative, we didn't want to say they were horror films. It was much easier to call them thrillers or science fiction because it was things were getting more conservative, and that was safer terminology.
And they're still making these kinds of films, aren't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think even this Blade Runner film definitely this new one here, it has science fiction, it has horror, you know, it has drama. You know, I think a good film really doesn't follow a cliched template of the genre they're in. They follow the story where it goes, and it might have aspects of humor and horror and adventure and all of those things.
Do people try to stump you with films?
Every day, and you know, I'm not a historian. You know, I host these things and I enjoy them, and I know a lot about bad movies,
You
or
don't know
you
every movie ever made.
misunderstood movies. What?
You don't
No,
know
of course
every
not.
movie ever made.
And people come up to me. It's like the gunslingers. I bet you never heard of this movie, Mr. Lobo. And then they'll tell me the answer of it, you know, Beyond the Flame Barrier, 1967, or whatever it is. And I'll say, well, thank you. This is exciting. I discovered a new movie. I'm gonna go run out and see it. There's too many movies for any one person to know, and that's part of what makes it exciting. I'm discovering new movies every day. You know, I'd be sad if I knew about every movie.
What movie said, "Here lies Lester Moore, four slugs from a 44, no less, no more"? What's the name of the movie? Do you know? You get a prize.
Here lies Lester Moore.
Here lies Lester Moore, four slugs from a 44. No less, no more.
Oh boy, George,
Tombstone.
I think you stumped the horror host.
The movie Tombstone. It was on his grave. That's what was written on his grave.
Okay.
I'll always remember that. That's a great part of that movie.
Well, you know, I don't think I've seen Tombstone, so I may have to.
See, you're the sci-fi horror guy. You don't watch the normal stuff.
I don't. You know, people ask me, like, oh, have you seen this new Academy Award-winning movie? And I'm like, does it have robots in it?
Did you ever see Goodfellas?
No, I haven't seen it. I have, and I enjoy.
That's a classic.
I enjoyed Goodfellas. Yeah, enjoy. There are a few of those that I have come. Mostly from before the time when I was hosting.
Favorite actors? Who would they be?
Favorite? Oh, there's so many. Oh, gosh, there's so many. I think it's sad that we're losing all our great character actors. You know, so many have
age. They're dying off. That's right.
You know, there are some of these guys that you don't really, you know, you don't know them real, you know, they're not leading men, but you just enjoy seeing
right.
them.
Well, Bruce Campbell's big in that era, isn't he?
Genre? I do like Bruce Campbell a lot, and I really enjoy the new Ash versus the Evil Dead, which has a new season coming up. And it's amazing how much longevity Evil Dead has had, which started as a small independent movie made for nothing. And, you know, has turned into a huge global franchise. Bruce Campbell would definitely be an actor that I enjoy. But I enjoy a lot of the ones that are more obscure. Like, I think Miguel Ferrer I always enjoyed. I thought he was he passed away very recently, and he was a tremendous actor. It's a lot of genre cred. I like Ian Holm, who was an alien in The Fifth Element. And so many, so many great films. You know, I think a lot of those, Christopher Lloyd. I can just watch Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, he's a classic. Marty, what are we doing?
We got to go back, Marty.
You did it even better than I did. That's good.
George, we got to go back.
What about Bela Lugosi?
Bela Lugosi is marvelous. And of course, all the, you know, him and Karloff are the two, are the first.
Classics.
Well, you know,
who's the guy who played that horrible-looking Nosferatu in that black-and-white movie?
Max Schreck.
Is that who that was?
Yeah.
That was a scary-looking look.
Absolutely. You know,
I didn't like that.
That movie almost disappeared from the earth because the Stoker...
Graham. Graham.
Bram Stoker estate sued the production.
They won, didn't they?
And they won, and they were supposed to destroy it. They were supposed to destroy everything, and somehow, somebody hit it, kept it going. So we still have that film today, you know. But
what was the name of the Dracula movie with Brad Pitt?
The Dracula movie, the vampire movie with Brad Pitt.
Was it Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise?
I think it's Tom Cruise. It's Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah, that's it. That's Tom Cruise was the vampire, right?
But see, that's one of those Mandela effect things where it's like, is it Interview with the Vampire or Interview with a Vampire? See, I remember it as Interview with a Vampire, but if you look at the posters and stuff, that's why I think we're in a different dimension now, George, because it says Interview with the Vampire. Now, I have another one for you. Is it, since Empire Strikes Back, does Darth Vader say, Luke, I am your father, or no, I am your father?
I would say, Luke, I am your father.
That's what I would say, too. But if you watch the movie, he says, no, I am your father.
And by the way, everybody says it's Interview with the Vampire.
Interview with the Vampire.
Interview right? with the Vampire. That's
how I remember it. I think, like I said, we're in another dimension. We're in a parallel universe.
But
proof.
I'm pretty sure Brad Pitt was in that movie.
Was Brad Pitt also an Interview with the Vampire? I you know, I have to go watch it.
I think he was the vampire, and so was Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise was the vampire.
He was Lestat.
Exactly, but Brad Pitt was in it. I would bet anything that Brad Pitt was in that movie.
Oh well, I'm not going to take that bet because I haven't seen that movie in 20 years.
Check it out during the top of the hour during the break and see if I'm right. I know he
about
was
12 there. Monkeys. That's a good Brad Pitt.
He was like the sidekick to Tom Cruise.
You may be right on that.
You remember it?
I just I'm it's fuzzy, you know. I these two conventions here.
Somebody at home's going, Nori, you're right. You're right.
You're right? Someone saying you're right?
No, I'm just saying they probably are at home.
Yeah.
Mr. Lobo.
It depends what dimension we're in.
Where'd you get that?
In my dimension, Brad Pitt isn't in that movie, and in your dimension, Brad Pitt is.
He is. Where did you get that name, by the way?
What name?
Lobo.
That is my actual given last name, is Lobo.
Does that mean wolf?
It does mean wolf. And we there. And my family actually has a long history of, I don't know if we have lycanthropy, but there is a castle in Portugal, a Lobo castle, which has a shield, a coat of arms with wolves depicted. But the reason I'm Mr. Lobo is I thought when I started this show, what could I live with? You know, if the show caught on and I'm getting into my car at 2 in the morning.
And someone yells your name, right?
Do we really want someone from across the street going, hey, Uncle Spooky Pants. Yeah, I saw the movie last Saturday. So I figured, you know, if I'm Mr. Lobo, then I could be someone's geometry teacher.
That's true. Well, we're going to come back in a moment and take phone calls with you. So share your favorite movies, horror, sci-fi, and if you want to stump Mr. Lobo like I just did, go ahead and give it a try.